This practice of arriving can be transformative. You know, as we do anything is how we do everything. So, I did actually, because there's some background noise. So for the practice, I'm going to mute you because I can't figure out where it's coming from. And I know I forget that they give you a little notice if I'm muting you. So, so this practice of arriving. Letting this actually be an entry point into compassionate presence. So can you let a deep listening to the body help guide you into a posture that supports both a measure of ease and restfulness, balanced with a quality of alertness, wakefulness, mindfulness has this quality of relaxed and warm-hearted presence. So we begin that cultivation as we settle into the body. And so you might see if there's any part in the body that's holding a measure of tension or tightness. And to see if there can be a loosening or a lengthening, softening or settling. Perhaps through the eyes, the jaw, melting shoulders away from ears. Relaxing through the diaphragm or the belly. To allow for a more fluid, easeful breath. Letting the legs grow heavier, resting more fully into the support beneath them. And maybe relaxing even through the palms of the hands and the soles of the feet. Letting the body rest resting into the support of the earth. So that we can then rest the mind on the body. And it can be supportive to have a focal point for where we rest attention on the body. So finding an anchor for yourself that works today. Perhaps gathering awareness to the breath. Wherever the breath is most alive for you. At the nostrils. Or in the movement of the rib cage or the abdomen. And if somehow the breath isn't the right anchor for you, maybe it's a felt sense of the touch points of feet on the floor, or your butt on the chair, or if you're lying down, maybe your back on the ground, or the hands, wherever they rest. Simply finding home base. And can you bring your whole self, the fullness of your warm-hearted, relaxed attention, to knowing this anchor, to knowing just this breath right here, as if you've never known a breath before? whatever is happening, you know, in your environment, maybe there's something else happening in the body. Maybe there's a sound, maybe there's a thought that is compelling in the mind. Can this anchor, can the breath be a place of rest, be a place of refuge? To gather the fullness of your attention again and again to this one place. This one experience. The arising and passing of a breath. That in some ways contains the whole world. Noticing what happens in the mind and heart when you get pulled away. And noticing what happens when you come home, when you begin again. Bringing your warm-hearted awareness to knowing just the next breath, just the next moment with your anchor. Just noticing, where's your attention right now? And if somehow it's been pulled away from your anchor, notice how you're meeting whatever you've been pulled to connect with. Maybe there's a quality of liking or disliking, judging or evaluating. Maybe there's some commentary on yourself or your capacity to pay attention. And then just see what it's like to let go and just find the next breath, the next moment with your anchor. It's like the breath, the anchor becomes this still place in the midst of the swirl of everything that happens around us. In the realm of sound and sensation, thought and feeling. And each time there's what we might consider a distraction. See what it's like to be pulled away and to very intentionally redirect awareness to come home to the moment. Come home to your anchor. Recognizing that this whole process of the attention being called in different directions and the coming home is the practice. The practice isn't just the moments of being with the anchor. It's the cultivation of the capacity to bring our warm-hearted awareness, our presence to a focal point with intention. And the practice is also observing what happens when we're pulled away. How do we relate with that experience? How do we relate with ourselves as the one having that experience? All of this deepens our understanding of the habits of our own mind and heart. And the wisdom that arises from that clarity can help guide us as we move through the world, as we act with the same warm-hearted, present intentionality. So as we come toward the completion of this practice, you might just reflect for a few moments on how might your warm-hearted presence and intention be of service and support to the world today. How might you bring this to those you'll interact with? Whether that interaction is inside your own heart or mind as you think about people in the world, people that you know, people that you don't know but you hear about through the news, or Maybe it's, you know, neighbors or family. Maybe it's people you really are interacting with in some way today. And it's not about having the right answer. It's really inviting in this inclination, this orientation of heart and mind, bringing the fruits, the benefits of this practice of pausing to gather and ground and cultivating warm-hearted awareness, bringing it back out into the world in some way. So may any gifts that I have received in practice today be somehow shared with the world so that all beings in the world know more kindness, more peace, more ease, more freedom. May it be so. So, I apologize for the mysterious background noise. I don't know what it is. I'm not hearing it on my end. I don't know if you all are still hearing it, but what a gift to be able to practice with something that, you know, may be disturbing or annoying. And sometimes it's like this, and in this virtual world, I find that is frequently the case. It's like this, and I have no idea where it's coming from. So, is it still going on, or is it... Yeah, I didn't have a smartphone, so I don't know what it is, but anyway, I'm glad. I'm glad that it's gone. May there be more peace for all of us. So, yeah. And I know that my phone rang across the room in the middle of this, so how fortunate. Reminds me of the time I was in a day-long training with Jack Kornfield, and he invited everybody to turn their cell phone on just so we'd have something to practice with. You know, it's like, okay, it's like this. We live in this world where there things are always buzzing or ringing. So I wanted to share a few additional thoughts about the topic of ethics or wise action, and to build on the theme. We talked some about it last time, and you know what we had talked about how there are these three baskets of practice that are all interwoven and that inform each other. There's the basket of samadhi or concentration, the cultivation or unification of mind, which is very much what we do in our practice, what we just did. We gather and we gather and we regather, and we build that muscle of kind attention, that capacity to direct where we bring our awareness. And then there's the basket of wisdom. Often there's insight into the habits of mind and heart that arise from this practice of settling and gathering. Things slow down enough and we can start to see what's going on in there. Oh, you know, what happens when I get distracted? When my peaceful meditation practice is distracted by a phone ringing or something, you know? Do I just sort of watch it happen and I gently come back? Do I get irritated? Do I, do I find that the mind chatter increases? Many things can happen. There's no right or wrong, but we get to watch that. And we learn something, potentially, about our habits of mind and heart. And then there's this third basket, sometimes labeled sila, which is ethical conduct, or, you know, skillful action or behavior out in the world. And that's the basket that often gets shortchanged in secular mindfulness, is what I was saying last week. And so I wanted to unpack that basket in more detail today. And one of the things that I've really appreciated from my teacher, Gil Fronsdell, is, you know, he talks about how there's not actually a direct translation in the Pali language for the word ethics. Ethics is like this big concept, and he pulls in several words that we might think of that could inform our action in the world. So one of them is sila, which is about our behavior in the world. And I'm going to share in more detail about that today. One is also a word that I really like. It's called kusala, K-U-S-E-L-A, I think, S-A-L-A, kusala. Sometimes folks like to know the spelling, that's often translated as wholesome or skillful. So, you know, there's wholesome and unwholesome action, you know, actions that somehow lead us into trouble, somehow lead us towards benefit, you know, that are helpful or unhelpful. And then there's also this idea that we can do what might be beautiful. We had talked about this concept of Kalyana, K-A-L-A-Y-A-N-A, that is, what is beautiful? What's the beautiful thing to do? Which can be such a sweet, you know, not, instead of what's the right thing to do, what's the beautiful thing to do? What would it be like if our actions were guided by that question in the world? And contemplating our actions and really holding that as part of the practice is not separate from the freedom of our minds and hearts. It's actually integral. You know, if we just pull ourselves deep into this internal practice where we cultivate, you know, this idea, you know, we get caught up sometimes as in our culture, this idea that meditation takes us or transports us to this really peaceful place, you know, that somehow it, you know, it's almost like a refuge in terms of like hiding from the world, but that's actually not what it's all about. It's like we do this internal work so that we can actually meet the world more fully with the fullness of our hearts and our minds that are clear and compassionate. And so one of the ways of doing that or thinking about this is through the framework of the five precepts, which are guidelines that are designed to promote harmony and reduce harm. And they speak of actions that we engage in out in the world, but one of the things that I love about them and I've found to be true in my own practice over the years of working with these and investigating them is that it's really actually promotes harmony in my own heart. it promotes a sense of peace, not just like externally out there between me and my neighbor, you know, however I frame neighbor, you know, my partner, my literal neighbor, my coworkers, my, you know, the board members on the board that I'm on, the, you know, all the people that we can experience friction with. It actually brings a greater sense of harmony and ease and peace into my own heart, my relationship with myself. And so I thought I would just name the precepts, and then this week and next week, maybe even a third week, I thought we could take a deeper dive into one of them, because they can be lifelong practices. So the first precept or mindfulness training is around non-harming, you know, not, it's often stated as not killing, but it's sort of this broader umbrella of harming, not harming. And each of the precepts can be viewed as like what you are supposed to avoid or refrain from or not do. They can also be framed in terms of like, what are we actually wanting to cultivate, or what's the opposite of that? So it's not that we want to stop it, like not killing. We actually are invited to cultivate a reverence or a cherishing of life. The second is often framed as not stealing, not taking that which is not freely given. And the flip side might be, you know, really cultivating an appreciation or a gratitude for that which we have, for that which is given. The third is often framed as refraining from sexual misconduct. And the flip side of that is really having a deep appreciation for the power of sexual energy, and a deep reverence for harnessing that energy in ways that we only touch or interact with others in a way that's deeply respectful and mutual. The fourth is sometimes framed as not lying. So what we might be cultivating instead is a commitment to the truth, you know, to seeking and speaking the truth. And then the last is around refraining from intoxicants, as often, you know, the way we use substances, and really it's an invitation to be very aware, very mindful, very conscious of what do we take in, what do we consume. And that can be broader than just drugs and alcohol. It can really be, how do we consume media? How do we consume food? How do we consume resources? So there's these guidelines, these arenas in which we can bring a very thoughtful, reflective, mindful curiosity. And so what I wanted to do is speak for just a few minutes about the first one, which is, you know, around refraining from harm. And I'm going to be pulling just a few thoughts from what Thich Nhat Hanh shares. And I'll just read you the couple sentences of how he frames this, because it's so beautiful. He says, "Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I vow to cultivate compassion and learn ways to protect the lives of people, animals, plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to condone any act of killing in the world, in my thinking and in my way of life." So he really has this beautiful framing of these mindfulness trainings, these precepts, that invites us to go deeper. And he talks about this first training as really the training of compassion, of opening our heart to suffering. And I would actually say, for me, I find it even broader than compassion, it's also just about care. It's about the broader family or flavor of the heart about care. Because we don't actually have to wait until they're suffering to cultivate reverence for life. You know, just appreciating the magnificence of what's here in this world and planet. And he also talks about really recognizing a quality of what he calls interbeing, the deep interconnectedness. Like this body right here is made up of plants. You know, I eat vegetables from the farm. It's made up of minerals that come up from the soil. It is, you know, if you're a meat eater, it's made up of the flesh of other beings. You know, the home, the heat, the, you know, everything that we have is somehow a result of this deep interconnectedness and interdependence. And so when we really take that in, it can evoke a natural sense of care, a desire to protect, to skillfully tend to all life. And it can evoke a commitment to what might be called nonviolence, you know, not causing harm. And just feeling compassion, you know, he says, is not enough. He says, feeling compassion is not enough. We have to learn to express it. So this is where the quality of action comes into the picture. How do we actually live our compassion? And we start with it internally. And that's where looking at the habits of our mind is important, too, because his one statement in there of, you know, I'm determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to condone any act of killing in the world in my thinking and in my way of life. So he even talks about killing in our thoughts. Where do we kill someone's spirit or someone's equality or perhaps someone's, you know, inherent human value? Sometimes we have hurtful thoughts, and he invites us to deepen our practice even into our habits of mind. This is where those three baskets really come together. The work that we're doing in here of watching habits in mind of heart really make a difference. He also challenges us. He offers one example that I really love. Like, how do we really hold these practices more and more deeply? So non-harming, he says, you know, every time we buy or consume something, we may be... I can't even read my own writing. I pulled out one little quote. We may be condoning some form of killing. When we buy something, we may be condoning some form of killing. So this practice is actually a very deep one. It's a lifelong practice to get more and more nuanced, more and more refined in how might we care. You know, and of course we forget to stay aware, and then we remember. It's just like with losing the breath, we keep coming back. So I'd love to give us about 5 minutes in breakout groups just for you to share on this theme, this idea of, you know, wise action in the world, this idea of non-harming and how it speaks to you, and then we'll come back, and I have a final poem for us on this. So, as always, you know, the breakout rooms are optional, but I invite you to join and to bring your voice, and if it works, your image into the room, and to enjoy each other's company. So, enjoy, and you'll have just about 5 minutes. So welcome back. We'll just see just briefly if there's anything that wants to be spoken before our final poem. You're welcome to unmute if you wish. Okay. So I thought I'd close with a poem by Joy Harjo. If you are not familiar with her, she is an amazing Native American poet. She is our 23rd Poet Laureate, who was appointed in 2019. So this is a poem entitled Eagle Poem by Joy Harjo. To pray, you open your whole self to sky, to earth, to sun, to moon, to one whole voice that is you. And know there is more that you can't see, can't hear. Can't know except in moments steadily growing and in languages that aren't always sound, but other circles of motion. Like eagle that Sunday morning over Salt River, circled in blue sky, in wind, swept our hearts clean with sacred wings. We see you, see ourselves, and know that we must take the utmost care and kindness in all things. Breathe in, knowing we are made of all this. And breathe, knowing we are truly blessed because we were born and die soon within a true circle of motion, like eagle rounding out the morning inside us. We pray that it will be done in beauty, in beauty. If you wish, I invite you to explore this week, you know, this deep practice of non-harming and cultivating care for all things so that it may be done in beauty, in beauty. Take such good care, dear ones. So good to be with you. And, I know some of you, I think most of you are on my mailing list. If you're not, there is a new class coming up that starts next week, and I know some of you had curiosity about it. So check out the website if you have an interest. And regardless, I hope I get to see you next Wednesday, and just lots of love your way. Take such good care, and I'll see you in a week. You are so welcome. Yeah. Bye, everyone. Bye. The reading, Joy Harjo.